Hi again, everyone. Merry Christmas and happy holidays. This is John Porteous of the Lovells Township Historical Society, and you're listening to the Backcast Podcast. Hey, welcome. Richard and I have a special Christmas treat for you today. We're going to be joined by Robert Thompson. Regular listeners may recognize RT's name from his film The River and from his previous appearance on the show. Frankly, we're just tickled pink to be one of the first stops on his film tour celebrating the streaming release of Night of the Hex 2. RT's got a lot of fun things going on, and so we're going to hear about them. So without further ado, let's hear what RT has to say.
So RT, welcome. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good. Tell us about your project, RT.
Well, it's I decided to do a reboot of the original film that I shot like in 2008, maybe, released in 2009, I think, called Night of the Hex.
It feels like it's been a while.
Yeah, it was the very first one I did. I know I've told the story before, so I won't get into the whole story with it, but it was... That project in 2009 was really never meant to see the light of day. It was me knowing that I had another project in the back of my mind that I wanted to do. And at the time, back in the early 2000s, the only way you could really watch anything, because this was, you know, YouTube wasn't what YouTube is now, was a DVD. And I didn't know the process of getting something from your head to an actual physical product.
To
something that would sit on a shelf somewhere. So Night of the Hex was mainly done to force myself to go through that process ahead of...
Your baptism by fire?
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't put a lot into it. I was going to end up going through the process, making 10, 15 copies, giving it to the people who were involved in it, and that was going to be the end of it, but... Once I started to get distribution on some of the later films, because they were starved for any kind of content, they said, "You got this thing, we'll take it." So it got thrown out there. Actually, you know, it did fairly well for as I hate to say it, as bad as it really was. But in the back of my mind, you know, as I went through, you know, a lot of other projects moving forward, that was always the blemish to me, you know, because I don't mean it to sound like arrogant or whatever, but I've always kind of, you know, thought everything that I did post Night of the Hex was fairly decent. And that was the one that just always didn't sit right with me. And because it was out there, you know, if it had never saw the light of day, I wouldn't care, but it was out there. And you know, fast forward many, many years, the way technology changed and camera changed and low light sensitivity changed, and the opportunity to, you know, fairly easily give it another go. After I said for, the, I don't know how many, fifth or sixth time that I was done doing these, I decided to take another crack at it.
Okay.
So that's what I did, and I assembled a somewhat familiar cast of people, and I started shooting it not this past year, but in 2022, and then continued into 2023. And there was originally I was supposed to be done with it, right? This was going to be it, but there was supposed to be a Wisconsin component to it. And that kind of got canned because they had some bad weather move in. And what I was going to do is roll up through Michigan, spend a week in Michigan last summer, then head up over the bridge into Wisconsin and spend another week over there on the Brule. But they just had the weather severely turned right before I was going to leave. And they were looking at 3 to 4 days of rain. Temperatures dropped. And my guy over there said, you know, dude, don't drive all the way over here and spend 4 days sitting in my cabin staring out the window.
Cursing at me, yeah.
Exactly. So, and I was like all for it. I'm like, dude, I completely understand. But then it kind of put me in a bind. I'm like, well, you know, because that was going to take up a decent portion of it. you know, I don't want to say half, but maybe. And then I'm like, well, now what am I going
to
do?
There's new opportunity to share.
Yeah. And, but so what I decided was I thought maybe I had enough Michigan stuff, right? And I thought maybe I could pull it off and that was going to be done. But then talking to a guy that's in the film, you know, he mentioned I have this lady who was actually up fishing that year, and it was the first time she had ever fished hex, and she really got into it. And he's like, "God, too bad you know you couldn't have been shooting her." And I thought, yeah, it would have been kind of an interesting angle because she's a fairly prominent. I mean, not well known, but she's a very capable and a very accomplished angler. She's fished all over the world. I think she's been on the cover of Fly Fisherman magazine a couple times, and what? she's a friend of Joe. She's a great angler, but she's really struggled with the hexing because, you know, she's used to the salt and fishing all over, you know, double haul and bombing out big cast, and she struggled with not being able to see the quarry or the fly and making 15-foot casts.
Yeah.
So it was a big change for her.
Can we share her name?
Her name is her first name is Grace. Is it Grace Smith? Because I don't really know her.
Okay. Gotcha.
But anyways, as Joe was speaking of her, I started thinking, oh, yeah, that would have been kind of interesting. But then I also knew in the back of my mind I wasn't going to Wisconsin. Then, you know, making more work for myself, I thought, well, okay, what if I just kind of postponed things a little bit and went to Wisconsin next year and got with Grace this year, and there's a few other things that have popped up. So I'll use what I have, cut a version now. Maybe call it the Michigan version, even though it's kind of Night of the Hex 2, but it'll eventually probably be known as the Michigan version. Then I'm going to go to Wisconsin, hopefully next year, get with her, do a few other things, and then take that footage, integrate it into the project or the version that we're talking about now, remove some stuff, and then maybe call that one a full version. So there's going to end up, if it all goes well, just to add to the confusion, there's going to end up being two versions. Actually, three if you count the original. So this little movie that I didn't really like is kind of, you know, turned out to be much more than I anticipated. So,
well, it's growing and evolving.
Yes, it is. It's evolved a lot more than I wanted it to. And, you know, and I could have just shut it down and said, you know, no, but I really want to go over to the Brule. And part of the reason is I've steelhead fished the steelhead waters numerous times. I've never been up into the trout waters. So I really wanted to get over there and do that. And the guy that I'm going with has been wanting me to get over there for a long time. So I think it's going to be worth the effort. But so I guess what people get to look forward to is another version of this. And that version will be added to the list of content that's in this version because there's a bunch of extras. So if when people go to, like, the landing page for Night of the Hex 2, there's all kinds of extras. It will just be added into that, so it's not like you have to rebuy anything. If you
sure.
Purchased it, you can come back later when it's done, because it'll be done like a year from now, if all goes well.
Yeah, and that's the, and for our listeners, RT was kind enough to allow us to preview this to prep for the call, and there is a massive amount of content available. And
that's out there on the streaming platform Vimeo, right?
Vimeo, yes.
Okay. And listeners, we'll have all kinds of links and additional verbiage in the show notes so that you can download this. But that alludes to the something coming in December 2024. Towards the end of the movie?
Yes, towards the end, I think I put, like, The Journey Continues 2024. So, yes, that's a little nod to what may be coming. And hopefully it all comes together. I mean, it's, you know, you're dealing with Mother Nature, and, you know, there's that kind of fine line that, you know, everything can kind of ebb and flow depending on how the winters went and how the spring is. So, you know, are you too early? Are you too late? Do you hit it just right? And it's, you know, it's a hike to get to the Brule, but I'm gonna you know, hope for the best and drive over there, and hopefully we can get that in taken care of and get the Michigan stuff going, and you know, maybe I'll, you know, it'll end up being probably what I'll call maybe the full version or the Wisconsin version. I have no idea, but like I said, if all goes well, there'll be another version of it for people to watch.
I like the way it's evolving, yeah. And I like the way you're handling it. It's if nothing else, I mean, you've got the advantage of newer technology,
yes.
Since the original filming.
Yep.
So better video, better audio.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about it. I've just got like 15 things floating in my head, so sorry mm-hmm. for the discombobulation here. But I want to come back to distribution a little later. We'll mm-hmm. we'll touch on that a little later because the whole streaming component makes this a lot more dynamic.
Yeah.
But logistics, some of the angles in the film, are you in a second boat sometimes? Or are you just in the river?
I was actually for I know the scenes that you're talking about. I was actually on the bank.
Okay.
And at first, when the guy that I was with mentioned, "I'm going to put you on the bank," I was not liking it. You know,
yeah.
I went along with it, but I'm thinking, okay, I don't know how that's going to work, because I was just thinking, you know, depending on how far out they are, can I get a light to them? You know, the light that I have on my camera probably isn't going to be bright enough to get to them, so I'm going to have to rely on their headlights or their headlamps, which worked out fine, but they ended up being close enough to me, and it was one of those situations where at first when he was talking about it and saying this is how we should do this, I was like, no, I don't like anything about this. Until I started shooting, and then I thought, I love everything about this.
Right.
Because it was such an interesting angle that you don't really see. I mean, because it was still a little different than a camera boat angle, I think.
Well,
so,
100%. I mean, that's why I wanted to ask about it, because the net result is a really cool look through the dark.
Yeah.
It gave a whole nother angle, and one of those intangibles that you just kind of walk away after you see it. It's like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty clever.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like, it's hard to describe. You just kind of have to see it. And I'm the same way. While I was shooting it, I was thinking, wow, this is really kind of cool. Because even though, you know, you would think he's in a camera boat, I wasn't, but it didn't really feel like a camera boat to me. It just kind of felt like a different perspective.
Yeah.
Which is what I really liked about it. Now, traversing along that bank, because it was a very steep bank, was not fun in the dark with a very expensive camera, because I kept thinking I was going to slide down the bank and end up in the river. But
it made me kind of wonder, you know, that's why I said, you know, were you standing in the river with your equipment?
What part of the river were you on?
We were on the lower-ish, you know, we were in the, you know, the McMaster's part of the river, MacDePalm area.
Okay.
Because a friend of mine bought property in there, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, well, there's actually two different times that, and I can't really remember, like, where in the movie. One time I was on one side of the river against the steep bank. The other time I was on the other side of the river in that same area, and it was just a field. So
okay.
the field was much easier. The bank was a lot more difficult because it was a lot of, and you know, and then right where the river, you know, it just kind of gradually doesn't drop off, but gradually gets deep. But it was all clay right there. So I was constantly having to readjust, and I'm trying to hold a camera and thinking my feet are going to slip out from underneath. And it's not going to be good. But there was at one point, the guy in the movie that's fishing says, and people won't really know what he's referring to, but I did. He says something to the effect of, that thing is so close to him, it's funny as shit, I think is what he says. And and that fish was rising literally 2 feet in front of me. And they're casting right at me. So off camera, I was guiding them in because the fish was moving. And I could say, okay, he moved about a foot off me and he moved about 2 feet in front of me. And
nice.
They could, you know, I was, you know, and because that fish was out and it was in, it was above and below me. and it was a tough fish to catch. It wasn't the biggest fish in the world, but there was a big dump of bugs in it. It was like the first big dump of bugs. And once we threw the light on, and that's the scene where he said, "Oh my God, there's so many bugs in the water." I'm surprised they caught that fish with as many bugs coming down the river as there was.
It's funny because, you know, for the listeners that may not have experienced a massive hex hatch, the amount of biomass in the air and on the water is just mind-numbing.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing where, and you could almost hear it a couple of times, or maybe I'm mishearing, but it's almost like you could hear bugs getting smacked on the back cast with the rod.
Yeah.
They're just so thick in the air.
And it's always also interesting, you know, if you manage to not turn any lights on other than your red lights during, you know, it can be going and you're hearing fish rise. You don't really know how many bugs there until the white light comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been like this huge surprise where you flip your white light on and you go, "Oh my Lord, look at this." And then you realize, "Holy Christ, there's a lot of competition out there right now." And then it suddenly kind of changes and you go, "Oh, not bad. Surprised I caught that fish."
It's kind of cool because, you know, people talk about, you know, the difficulty of casting during a trico hatch because of the amount of biomass on the water.
Yeah.
But every bit the same scenario. How is your fly getting chosen over the 3 million others in that two square feet? It's a fun game. It's definitely a fun game. The one of the other, you know, shooting wise, you know, before we get talking about tales of fishies and bugs, but you did a nice job with the drone use too. I thought that adds another dimension and, to use your word, another level of perspective. Clever and creative. I like it.
Yeah, it's drone footage. I think sometimes it's overused in a lot of pieces. And I do like, you know, who doesn't like drone footage? But I think if you use it in just the right amount, not saying I did or I didn't, just sprinkling it in, I love, you know, going and suddenly changing your perspective and seeing, you know, seeing a river, you know, such as maybe the South in a way you've never seen it before,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of cool.
Yeah. You just opportunity
and,
for a wide open view, you know, unless you're up.
Right. And also I thought was interesting as I was watching some of the footage back of just how clear the South is, and you can really see almost how shallow it is. And you can see where it's shallow and where it's deep. You know, you can really see the, you know, the topography of the river channel.
The definition of stream is amazing.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty interesting because I had never seen, you know, the South from that perspective. So I thought it was kind of cool. Yeah. So I'm big fan of the drone footage.
Like it.
Aside from the the fishing and the commentary, the thing is worth looking at. Just from the, you know, for the production value, it's really an interesting and entertaining piece of work.
Thank you. I mean, that was like, the challenge for me on something like this is since it's predominantly in the dark, and it's a big ask to get an audience to not necessarily watch you fish, but to listen to you fish.
Yep.
You know, so it was kind of, you know, that was always a kind of a challenge, is because the fishing to a point almost starts to be very repetitive because you don't see anything and you're just hearing people trying to strategize how to catch this fish, which is kind of cool. But I think you can only listen to that so many times.
Well, you wouldn't want to make a habit of it, but I will say this. I think it lends the old radio theater, the mind element to your film.
Yes.
And I think it allows the viewer's imagination to take a role in the film as well.
Yeah. And what I tried to do, like in the second year, was I got a bunch of these little tube LED lights and I tried to set them around in different areas of the boats. And have them dim down to as low as they could go, and then I can control them with an app on my phone where I could kind of turn them on, and not so as to screw up the fishing, and not to look like a, you know, a clown show going down the river with it all lit up like the 4th of July, because I didn't want to be that guy, but to somewhat discreetly be able to turn lights on, so not that you could see what's going on, but you could almost see the outlines or silhouettes or shadows of people casting it, instead of just listening to it in the dark, just try to bring, you know, kind of a different dimension. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Sometimes people had an issue with the light, sometimes it didn't bother them. So that was kind of a work in progress. And I'm not sure how well it worked, but
some of
the footage I really liked. Some of the footage I did really like. Some of it didn't work all that well. But I wished I would have been doing that, you know, right from the get-go.
Well, it's clever, though. I mean, that's, you know, as you go through these things and as you've learned through your previous films, you're going to find a trick here and there and incorporate it, and you can, you know, grow with it. And, good Lord, I'm thinking when the first version came out, there certainly weren't lights that could be controlled via your cell phone in the middle of the river.
No, the very first one I did, you know, we the light that I had on the camera, in the industry they call it a sun gun, and it's basically on or off, and there's no way to control the light, and that thing can light up a football stadium. So when you turn that thing on, you lit up the entire river corridor, and it was really harsh. And now with the technology, with these LED lights, I mean, I can keep it on 3%, 4%, 5%, and the sensors have this, you know, enough sensitivity that you can get a reasonable exposure, and though it's still enough light that it'll mesh your white light up, nobody's like complaining that this thing's too bright, and you know, like when I did the river and I shot some of the hex stuff, you know, the guy that was fishing was constantly, dude, light, screaming at me that the light was too bright, and all I could do was really kind of put my hand over it.
Right.
You know, just to knock it down a little bit. So it was much nicer and much easier on everyone. And sometimes I don't even think people even really realize that I turned it on. If I had it at, you know, 1% or 2%, it wasn't any more powerful than a headlamp. And it just helped kind of fill in a little bit of the light. So it was a much better experience in this newer technology than back when I did it in 2009.
It's just so cool because even the twilight stuff, RT, it's the amount of light that the lens is able to capture is incredible. It's like I know what time of night that is, and it's like that's just a completely different experience.
Yeah, there's a scene when the guy catches the really nice fish on the ISO. The 23-inch.
Yep.
It's when you look at that footage versus what I was seeing through the viewfinder, by the time he netted that fish, I could barely see.
Yeah.
You know, in the viewfinder. But when you look at the footage, there was still so much more light than what was really there. So how these cameras kind of manufacture light is baffling to me.
Uh-huh.
Because that image is much brighter and there was much more there than if you know, if I took my eye away from the camera and just looked, I was like, wow, it's dark.
It's dark, yeah. It's the viewers are going to be in for a treat. It's just, from a technical perspective, I don't want to impugn your talent at all, because the way you've shot the film, you've edited the film and produced it, it's beautiful. But it is truly incredible what the technology is able to add to the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of why I wanted to revisit it, just to see how far you could push it, and I'm sure you could really push it a lot more. I mean, given, you know, that a lot of these guys are now fishing with green lights and that, and I can turn my LED light to green, I'm guessing I could pretty much probably leave my light on and watch a fish feed.
100%.
I didn't want to go down that road just yet, but I'm curious, maybe next year I might see what happens. And I mean, the perfect,
we'll have some fun with that.
Yeah.
I got a couple of things I want to experiment there too. But the as far as I'll circle back because you kind of alluded to it when you were on the steep bank there. But were there other any other bump in the night stories to share, or beavers slaughtered at an unexpected time, or
we had some beavers. Nothing that was too crazy. I would say the interesting stories that came out of, kind of in the background kind of deals, was two of the, what I consider the, on either end of the spectrum, two of the cooler things that happened, were bonuses. They were never meant to happen. And, on the one perspective, and he will be endearing to probably a lot of people, is Captain Jimmy. And he's a guy in our camp, and no offense to Jimmy, he was never supposed to be in the thing. And it was a night where I got up a night early, and it was the first time, and this was in 2022, that I had this LED camera light, and I wanted to try it out. And I was going to officially start shooting the next night. But since those guys were going to go on a float, I said, I climbed in with Jimmy, and I said, I'm going to test this light out and kind of see, how it works, and there's no pressure. I didn't even mic him up. I had a camera mic, but I didn't even put a wireless mic on him.
So
he's
an intense angler.
He's very intense. Yes, Jimmy is.
He knows what he wants to catch, and I like that.
He does. Jimmy's a little all over the place, a little bit. Maybe a little neurotic at times, a little OCD, but he's ours. He's our Captain Jimmy. but anyways, so I went with him just to test the camera out. And we got to a certain stretch of the river, and the ISOs were going. And a very large fish was crushing them, and that's the part of the movie where he kind of buggers it up. Well, I guess half and half, half buggered up and half the fish straightened out the hook.
And we've all been there.
Yeah. But once that happened, and it was, to use one of my favorite terms, kind of a shit show. Because he was blaming, Jimmy, Flyland always finds Jimmy's feet, and he's blaming his new boots, which really had nothing to do with it. And I didn't show as much as there was. He kept doing it. And you can hear me in the movie go, Jimmy, what are you doing up there? And then he ends up hooking the fish. It straightens the hook. He loses it, et cetera, et cetera. But I couldn't just leave it at that, because when I looked back at the footage, I went, I can't not put this in.
Right.
But I can't just leave it at that either. I need to give Jimmy some redemption to go with him again the following year, because I was booked up. I didn't have any nights to go back out with him. So I said, Jimmy, you and I will go out the next year, which would have been this past year, and we'll get you a fish so you can get redemption, and we don't just see you with a hook that bent you out.
Yes, staring forlornly at that fly.
Right. Saying that was violent. So,
what is landing it, honestly, sometimes.
Yeah. Maybe sometime later in the moment, it was kind of a crushing thing. And again, that's kind of why I said, all right, I can't just leave it at this. I'm going to put it in because it's too good not to. But I got to give the guy another shot at it. So that was one of those moments that wasn't supposed to be that happened. And then the other one was a very similar situation on the better end of it. Was I have two cinema cameras that I used. I have two cameras that I went over. And there's a whole, for the techie geeks, I did a whole little hour thing where I talked about just the cameras and lenses that I used. And it's one of the extra features. But I took the little camera with me. I refer to them as the bigger camera and the little camera. So I took the little camera with me, which I hadn't had out for the fishing part of it. And we were going to hike into the south, and it was taking a big risk because at that particular time, There was very little chatter about bugs in the south, so we knew we wouldn't get a spinner fall. We were putting all our eggs in a basket that we might catch the hatchers. If nothing else, let's keep our fingers crossed and we get some kind of an ISO deal. Mm-hmm. So I followed Chad, the guy in the movie, followed him back into his spot, expecting nothing. I fully expected that we were just going to go for a walk. We were going to sit on a bank. We were going to shut her down about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and head back to the truck.
Okay.
And, you know, we get to that spot, and I don't know, once he gets rigged up, we sat there 15, 20 minutes, and that fish that he ends up catching rises for the first time. And we were both like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then it got quiet, and then he rose again 10, 15 minutes later. He started to get a little more active. Chad went up and fished to him, put him down. One started going right out in front of us. He came back down to me, started fishing. Then that one started going again, and he walked back, went, you know, waded back up there and got him, I think, on the second cast. And you know, in the back of my mind, one of the boxes I wanted to check when I started this was, wouldn't it be great if I could get a fish around 9:30, quarter to 10, in the daylight, you know, when it's lighter and you can see the whole deal.
Right.
And it turns out to be a great fish. Well, there you go. And that was, you know, that was a 23-inch fish.
Well, on an ISO.
On an ISO. Yeah.
It's
in low, clear south, you know, south water that he was using 5X. So, you know, a lot of things went right that night. So I walked out of that night thinking, oh, my God. I mean, this is a complete bonus trip.
Yeah, that's a positive omen.
Yeah. So I was, and if I remember correctly, the rest of that time wasn't so great. You know, because it was a funky year where I think it was a few nights later they finally started going on the south, but of course we weren't there. And, you know, it's just the way these things go. I mean, you know, it very rarely does it end perfectly, or very rarely do you get everything you hoped you'd get. There's always, you know, always something that you leave on the table. You know, for instance, because I wanted to kind of break things up, and I also wanted to show that hex just isn't on trout and in trout rivers, there's a whole nother hex thing that happens in the warm water rivers that will happen on some lakes for warm water species. So there's a river that I fish up near the cottage that gets a pretty good, the red hex, in August.
Nice.
So I got a buddy of mine that we fished it numerous times before, and I wanted to shoot that. So he got his wife, and we hopped in the boat, and we had like 2 days to do this. But the tricky thing with that is no one's doing it. No one's fishing that. So there's no reports. So you just kind of have to go and keep your fingers crossed that good things will happen. So we just based it on this is normally when they happen, when it happens, and this is a section of river that it generally happens on. So we're just going to float during the day, catch some bass, sit at night, and hopefully it happens. And it did. And the bugs came, but I think we were on the early edge of it. I think we were there maybe either night one or night two, because the bugs just weren't as prolific, and we didn't have the big bugs. I mean, I'm sorry, we didn't get the big fish up. All we got was the small fish. So that was one of those things where you kind of go, God, if we could have just, you know, it's here. Everything is here. Everything sets up perfectly. We're just too early, and that's the only two nights we had. I'll bet if we came, would have came three or four nights later, you know, 75% of the bass in that river are tuned into those bugs and they're eating them.
Right.
So that's just one of those things where you kind of go, ah. You know, of all the things when I watch that piece down, I think, God, I wished I could have that one back.
Well, share with our listeners, RT, these are not little 10-inch stock or smallmouth that we're talking about here.
No, this is a really great smallmouth river, and you know, because I've fished the hatch before in that river numerous times. I mean, I don't know if you get like the biggest bass in the river will turn on to the hex, but you can go and catch 15, 16-inch, 17-inch bass, you know, for a good couple hours if it's really going and they're really tuned into it. And it's just an absolute hoot. I mean, I actually prefer it more than the trout end of things. So I really wanted to show that, and it was there, and that's the bummer about it. It was all there, like the table was set. We were just a little too early, but they couldn't do it, and I couldn't do it. But it is one of those things that since I'm doing this again, we're going to try again next August.
Okay.
And we're going to delay it just a little bit. But again, even though we delay it next year, doesn't mean we still might be too early or too late. But we're going to give that one one more go, because I just think it's cool. I just think that there's a whole underutilized hex thing that happens, not only on some of the warmer parts of rivers, but on lakes as well.
Oh, yeah, it's not like they only hatch coming out of rivers. It's you did show a still photo during the film of a gas pump and a sidewalk and a storefront out by a lake. I'm assuming that's off Lake Erie or something. But
which one was?
You hear these stories of cities and municipalities having to get their snow plows out to scrape the biomass is so thick. It just actually literally has to be plowed away.
Yeah, that was actually in Minnesota. That was off the Mississippi.
Okay.
And that's that gets so prolific, it shows up on radar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like serious biomass.
Like a snowstorm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember growing up as a kid, down in the Detroit area, friends and that they were so thick coming off, like, say, Lake St. Clair, they would, had to have snow plows down, like, in Grosse Pointe, to get rid of them. It's an amazing amount of biomass.
It's just like.
Yeah, it is. It is. And also come to think, like Josh Greenberg in part of his interview, kind of one of those come full circle moments. I remember like ice fishing as a kid, and I had no idea that a wiggler was a hex nymph. and how it would come full circle. At the time as a kid, I was like, I thought they were gross and creepy, wanted nothing to do with them. But then, as I sit now, there's a love affair with them now.
Exactly.
So it's funny how at the time, little did I know, X amount of years later, how, profound this little creepy thing would be in my life.
Well, to that end, RT, did we ever talk about your first hex trip?
No. My first hex, and I'll try to keep this brief, but my first hex trip, revolves around, our all of our friend Rusty Gates. And I don't know what it was that he saw, and maybe it was because I came up there when I started fly fishing. I knew nothing about Gates. I knew nothing about the Asable. So I didn't hold him like in this reverence that as I would find out later that a lot of people did. At the time he was just some old skinny dude who I thought just worked in the shop. Right? Because he wasn't like my point of contact back then. But anyways, I would find out later from hanging around there, how important he was to the river and those who fished it. But for whatever reason, he took somewhat of a liking to me. And, I think it was my second or third year. I'd heard all about this kind of night fishing and evening fishing, and I wasn't really doing any of that yet. I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. I was always under the, I better get out of this river before it gets too dark, not knowing that really that's when I probably should have been getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him an email one day because I was coming up and I had a room, and I said, Rusty, I'm going to try this hex deal. And I never really asked him for much of information. I was always under the, I'll go out and just kind of figure it out. So I said, I'm not looking for any particulars. I know that it doesn't happen on all sections of the river. Can you give me an idea about what area of the river or what sections of the river might I have a shot at this? And he sends me back an email, and he gives me a couple, loose directions. You could go here, you could go here, or he gives me a set of like directions to drive somewhere and says, you could go here, and I'll be there about 7:30. So, of the three options, which ones do you think I did?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I left from Chicago and drove up there, followed the directions, pulled up, and he described, you're going to see a little camp. You're going to see a tent. That's a guy. He might be there. The guy camping, Jerry Schweibert. Good dude, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, shout out to Gary or Jerry. Rumor has it, I heard he just passed, which is very disappointing. He's a great dude. But anyways, I pull up, I see the tent, no one's around. I get out of the truck and I'm looking around, and a little cabin sits up on the bluff, and I look down. It looks like there's a chair in a fire pit, so I wander down there and I sit and I'm just staring at the river, and at the time I have no idea where I'm at. And I'm sitting there just kind of staring. I think it's kind of a cool little thing. And I hear a car pull up, hear car doors open. And if you remember, Rusty had the two dogs, Buster and Ruby.
Uh-huh.
And here comes Buster and Ruby flying down the trail. And, of course, I know those dogs. I'm like, I'm in the right place. I walk up, and Rusty's like, hey, Dave, you found it? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you know, what is this place? He goes, oh, this is camp. Now, if you followed back in the day, you know, Rusty's fish reports, he would mention camp every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
And that was like the first time it hit me. I'm like, whoa. I'm at camp. I'm like, oh, how the heck did I end up at camp? So he shows me around, tells me there's going to be some you know, people that are going to come out later that I should meet, and you know, we're going to fish out front. And it turns out it was, you know, John Walters was one, and Skip DeWall, and Jerry ended up coming back, and I think that was it. And then Rusty and I, and Rusty never fished, but I will say that we just got absolutely corked that night. I mean, just corked. But being new and not, you know, I kind of stayed somewhat good because I didn't want to be like the new, who's this new drunk knucklehead?
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone was very nice to me because I think, you know, they held Rusty at a point of reverence that if Rusty gave the okay for this dude to be here, he's fine with us. So
yeah.
I was welcomed in.
Entertainment.
Yeah, the new entertainment. Get this guy loaded and let's see what he's worth. But I kind of stayed, you know, relatively sober. And anyways, at that particular camp, Rusty had just great hex water out in front of him. And this is water that's like below town line. And he's got great water. And I had never hex fished before. And, you know, he kind of gave me the lowdown. He didn't fish. He just sat at the lower fire pit. And, you know, the three or four of us could just spread out. And I went out there and worked a fish and worked a fish and worked a fish and finally got it to eat. And, oh, you know, who else? Lance Wayneth was out there as well because Lance helped me net it. And it ended up being probably 21, 22. And, you know, that was my first hex deal. And, you know, at the time I didn't realize, you know, what I kind of just walked into. But as I would find out, it was also a business decision why he probably had me out at that camp. And the reason was, you know, I used to put my dates in and I'd just carry them over every year. And I got my dates in, so I was taking up a room at the lodge during prime time. But I'm generally coming up from Chicago by myself. At that point, I really wasn't doing guide trips anymore. I really wasn't eating in the restaurant. I was buying a few stuff in the shop, but I was very self-sufficient. So from a business standpoint, he's not making any money off of me. In prime time. So he basically invites me out to the cabin and says, you know, the next day, I saw him in the shop and he said, you coming back out? And I'm like, yeah, you know, if you want me to, yeah, come back out. You know, we're doing the same thing again. So I came back out and, you know, before everyone showed up, he kind of gave me the lowdown that, look, this, you know, this place is for friends. You're a friend. You can use the place whenever you want. Here's the criteria. If you come out, you got to do one of three things. You got to either bring a pie, two bags of ice, or a case of beer, or as many as you want. And that was the criteria. And I was like, cool. So I got kind of welcomed in, but he was kind of welcoming me in to get me out of the room, so he could rent those rooms to people who were going to do guide trips and, you know, eat in the restaurant and do all that kind of stuff. Because I never stayed at the lodge. I don't think ever again. You know, while he was around in the cottage, you know, or in the camp was available, that's where I went. So we just went out to camp. So now what I found out later is he actually had another camp, and that was like for the inner circle, which I didn't even know about that one. So there was kind of like the peripheral circle that would go up to what he called Frog Camp, but then there was like the inner circle that was at the Big Creek Camp. Now, make a long story longer, come full circle on that deal. After he passed, one of our group approached Julie about the Big Creek Camp, and we ended up buying it. So now we own that camp, which is kind of cool.
The pirate camp now, right?
Pardon me? Yeah, pirate. Yep. Yep. We're a lot of that, a lot of the, at the opening scenes of the movie and all that stuff. That's out at Pirate. That's our group of knuckleheads. So anyway, so that's my first hexer. Now, do you guys fish hex?
I do. I don't do it the way a lot of other folks do.
Okay.
I'd say about once every 3 or 4 years is good for me.
Yep.
It's just enough to sate your big fish need.
Yep.
While still allowing you to appreciate smaller fish on smaller flies.
Yeah, I definitely think it's an acquired taste.
Yeah.
and everyone knows that it's, it's probably the peak of crowdedness and the peak of stupidity, on that river. And there's not a lot of stupidity on the river, but if there's ever stupidity on the river, generally it's generally in the hex time of year. And
maybe some of it's stupidity, and some of it is just like people's minds blank, and people that would normally be the nicest folks you could ever run into and walk across coals to pick up a piece of litter on the other side of the street. Come hex, it's just there's a switch that flips in some folks that's it's different.
Yeah, I guess that's what I mean. Maybe stupidity was a little harsh, but I've seen stupidity. It's that one time a year where you just shake your head at times and think, Jesus, this for a fish.
There's stupidity out there. You can recognize it, and I'm sure it's there.
Yeah. So I think it's, I know there's people that just want nothing to do with it because they don't like the crowds and everything that it brings. And then there's people that just salivate and live for it, and that's their deal. I'm probably somewhere in the middle. I don't like the crowds, and I don't like generally seeing people when I fish. So at least it's dark, so you don't have to really see people, though you see a lot of lights and this and that. But I guess I fall somewhere in the middle. I can live with it and live without it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a North Branch guy, I fish the brown drakes, and that's my nighttime fishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be off the river by 1 o'clock at the latest. I'm not wild about staying out all night catching. I don't hate any fish that much.
For
love of them, I guess.
Honestly, your friend grabbing that beautiful fish on the ISO, that's, if there's a favorite hatch for me, it's a toss up between ISOs and trichos.
Yeah. Those are two good ones. On opposite end of the spectrum, but they're two good ones.
Well, yeah, you're not going to get the biggest fish on ISOs, but you're going to get definitely respectable fish.
Yeah. Yep.
And
ISOs can also be an evening saver.
Yeah.
Because if the hex don't happen, I know there's a lot of people that say, as a general rule, they are not going to fish to a fish until the hex. Even though there's a good fish crushing ISOs right there, it's still light out, and I don't want to blow up anything, and I'm going to wait till hex. And I completely disagree with that. If you got a shot at a good one right there, get him.
That's a John Garrick state of mind. I'll sit on the coffee or sit on the bank and drink coffee until something happens I want it to happen.
Yeah. I just look at it. If you got an opportunity, because I know too many people or too many stories when somebody has seen probably maybe an 18-inch fish going active on ISOs, and they've sat on it and said, nope, I'm going to wait, and then nothing really happens in the hex, and then that was it. They could have had their chance 2 hours ago, but they let it pass. So I'm the type, if I know there's a good one out there that's worth catching, and it's 9:30, I'm going to catch it, or I'm going to try to catch it.
Got it, man.
Yeah, so that's just the way I look at it. But
I'm not going to spoil anything here, but within the unexpected realm, if you will, you encountered a little bit of weather during filming, didn't you? Or was that lightning storm far, far away?
That lightning storm was far, far away. That lightning storm caught us after we caught that fish, and that was by far not even close to the single worst rowout I've ever had. Because, I mean, when it came down, it came down. I mean, it was just, it was, I mean, we had to almost stop and bail the boat out a couple times. Because the problem was,
hand bailing.
Well, he had things to bail, and we started kind of bailing, and I was starting to get nervous because even though I have gear in like waterproof bags, sometimes I'd look down and, you know, some of the bags were floating, and
right.
I'm trying to bring everything up onto my lap, and, you know, and we just got pummeled because it was about an hour, a little over an hour row out, the way that trip set up, and we just had to do it in the rain.
Oh,
and it wasn't like a gradual, oh, here it comes. It was, you could hear it getting closer, and it was like, you know, you get that big band of rain that's just coming, that driving rain, and then you could hear it coming. And then you could hear it, like, coming up the river. And we're like, oh, boy. And then we just got hammered.
It's one of those cool slash depressing things.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is so awesome that nature's just crawling up on top of us. And it's so depressing that we're just going to be miserable now.
Yeah. I mean, it was still raining so bad when we got to the takeout. It wasn't even one of these no shaking hands, no this. It's like the boat went up, it got drained, you know. Everyone just went to their cars when we were done, and we all just left.
Yeah, we'll all talk later.
right. There was no shaking hands, no small talk. It was like everyone to their car and out. It was horrible. Mm. I don't know, and I don't know what it is. Every time I'm with those guys for Hex, we get rained on. And
well,
then it happened also in another time there, in the movie. There was lightning, and the guy asked, maybe you should check the radar, and Tank says, yeah, we're going to get wet, and we did. Right at the takeout, we got wet.
Dude, I got stuck over on the Manistee waiting, I was in a section of the river where I really couldn't see the horizon too well, so I really didn't know what I was getting into, and I had been too damn stupid to, you know, actually try to look at radar or weather report before I left. It's a little dicey with a, you know, 9.5-foot graphite rod in the middle of a thunderstorm in a river.
Yeah, there's a lot of things can go wrong. In those situations, a lot of things can go wrong. Like, you know, on that rowout, all I could think about was, you know, I got a lot of gear and a lot of batteries and a lot of things could go wrong right now. So I just put my faith in these, you know, these weatherproof and waterproof bags, and everything was fine. But it just adds an element of stress that you don't need.
Thank you.
You know, because there's water around you, water in the boat, water up to your ankles in the boat, and you just have nothing but electrical equipment.
You know,
and everything. The wireless mics, I was worried about the wireless because they still had their wireless mics on. I told them to turn them off, but the mics are getting pounded with water and this and that, and it was like, oh boy.
Well, there's your testimonial to your hardware.
Yes, they build them good. They build them good. I mean, the newer camera I was using is weatherproofed to a point, but not to that point.
Yeah.
So...
Which is, it's like opening the door on a submarine and shooting video. It's not going to go well.
No, it's not.
Well, so let's talk a little bit before we wrap. I wasn't trying to be facetious at the beginning of our conversation. This is one of those just-in-time for Christmas cool deals for the angler in your life.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit. Not only about Night of the Hex 2, but basically your catalog is available, isn't it?
Yeah, everything's pretty much a stream now. You know, there's, you know, the days of DVDs have long since passed us by, and everything is streaming now, and I have pretty much all the titles on Vimeo. And if you put like the link to the Night of the Hex 2 deal in the description, if people scroll down, I put all the links to all the other titles.
Oh, perfect.
So they're pretty easy to find. If you just, you know, when you read the description of what Night of the Hex 2 is about, if you just scroll, you'll see it. You can't miss it.
Just page down a little bit more because you've done a nice job of, you know, putting all your offerings there, and it's this is not a gratuitous plug. It's just, folks, go out and check this out, because this is a very talented gentleman doing really cool stuff that will provide you hours of entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's kind of funny. A guy that I knew that was going to get the thing shot me a text a few days ago, and he's like, "Dude, I'm flying to Germany. When's this thing going to be out?" I'm like, I think I can help you out. Because, you know, because technically, I don't know when this will come up. But, I mean, technically, it's available now. I just haven't, you know, so you guys could watch it and some other people could watch it. I published the thing and it's available. Just haven't said anything about it. A few people have stumbled upon it because some orders, you know, have come in, which is nice. But it's, you know, when I made it available, it just coincided with him being able to fly to Germany. So either on the way there or on the way back, he was watching it, which I think is kind of cool.
I think that's awesome.
It's a tougher thing these days. You know, it was great when there was DVDs because you could set those on you know, fly shop counters, and there was impulse buys and all this stuff, and I didn't really have to do a lot. You know, I could just get into the distributors and they did everything, and if they're sitting on a fly shop shelf, you know, that made it very easy to get rid of these things. Now you have to really lean into these things to find an audience, and for someone like me who really hasn't got the memo that the way I'm doing it isn't the smartest way to be doing these things, you know, you're competing with YouTube because there's so much content on YouTube and it's free. You know, so the consumer doesn't have a lot of skin in the game because they can just kind of click around and click around, and I'm the idiot who's creating stuff saying go here and, you know, pay $15 and you can watch this thing. Not a great model in today's world. YouTube world.
Times as you want.
Oh.
Say what?
Yes, I spend a lot of time on YouTube looking at stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the production values on, you know, when I previewed your stuff, it's a next level stuff. It's better than what you're going to find on YouTube.
Thank you, and I hope so. I mean, I hope that's what people, you know, the conclusion people will come to. But still, I mean, free is such a tough thing to compete against, you know. Well, I think just by human nature, you know, we'll take the path of least resistance, and that is free. So it's just, you know, it's a tough thing to run up against. And I'm not going to be a YouTuber, and it's not disparaging YouTube. I mean, YouTuber is very cool, and it's like a huge disruptor, like in my industry. Because I do actually work in television film, it's almost like a disruptor, in that you can actually work in this business without ever having worked a day in the business. And,
exactly.
And by that, what I mean is, there's all these YouTubers who have these channels, and I don't mean this to sound rude, but it's kind of true. There's a lot of them that I call YouTube DPs, YouTube Director of Photographies, or pretend Director of Photographies. who have never worked a day in their life in the business, but they have this channel, and they may have 100,000 followers, and they pretend, they sit in their apartment or in their basement or whatever, and they pretend to do like lighting setups and show you how to do this and show you. And I'm not saying what they're doing is wrong, but they've never really applied it in the real world. And that's crazy to me, that if you do it right, you can almost make a living just being like a YouTuber, showing people how to do stuff that you've never actually done yourself in the real world.
It's the old coach thing.
Well, yeah, having spent a number of years working in a fly shop, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But if I want to know how to change the tractor, I change the oil, my John Deere, I'd look at YouTube. Or if I want to know how to change the router bit, but if I want to look at good pictures of the river, I know I have to go probably to another level, another place.
Definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, free's cool. We get it. It's not that I haven't seen free YouTube videos, but if you want more than just a story and you want a visual experience, then definitely take the time and check out RT stuff. It's great.
I got to say, the guy in the movies said anything that's free is worth saving up for. But
well, I didn't hear that. What was that?
anything.
I want to hear it.
Anything that's free is worth saving up for.
Oh, okay.
A quote from Escanaba in The Moonlight.
Yeah. There we go. That's going to have in the moonlight.
But,
there we go.
Yeah, I think what you've done, RT, is really good stuff. I mean, it's pretty to look at. It makes you feel better, just regardless of how you feel about it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was. I mean, like I said, I'm my own worst critic, and you know, you put these things together, and you go through ebbs and flows. Some days I'd be watching it down, and thinking, oh, this isn't half bad. And some days I'd watch it down and think, who is going to sit through this garbage? You know, this is horrible. And then you walk away from a couple of days, and you come back, and you watch a section of it again, and you think, oh,
that's pretty cool.
That's actually not so bad. But then, you know, so I'm constantly going up and down and up and down. But it was interesting this past weekend. I finally watched it like how a lot of people would probably watch it. Then I called it up on, you know, I went to the link and did it just like how anyone else would do it and just watched it, you know, at the kitchen island on my laptop.
Oh,
through
wow.
Crappy speakers. And I just sat there and watched it, and I went, huh, that's not all that bad. And it ended up, you know, it wasn't supposed to be the version, you know, how I envisioned it, because it was missing the Wisconsin and missing some other stuff. But even still, I thought it turned out pretty good.
I think it turned out great, and I know people will enjoy it.
I hope so. Yeah,
a lot of fun. So, what's next, man? You've teased the 2024 December project a little. Do you have anything else cooking?
No. No. Let me get through this, you know, this June thing. And then, you know, like I said, this time of year next year, there'll be another version of it that if you get the download this time, I mean, it's going to be added. I think that's a thing that I need people to understand. That, you know, it's not like I'm going to release it and people have to pay for it again. I'm going to include it in the offerings in that list.
There
so
you go.
Those who buy it will just, you can come back to it this time next year, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that it all happens, all falls in place, and there'll be another version of it. So
it's the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it's the gift that keeps giving. Who would have thought? The little engine that I hated back in 2009 is now the gift that keeps giving.
Exactly.
So we'll see. But yeah, no, but beyond that, I don't know. I the people who really know me, I was saying I was done after the river. Right?
I recall a comment or two like that.
Yeah. I was done after the river, and then I ended up doing Spay Days and Summer Haze and then Muskie Country Lessons, and then I've done four since then. So I quit saying I'm done, because every time I say it now, people just look at me and go, dude, you've been saying that since 2014.
Well, so here's a different way to spin it. I think that's just RT code for I'm still pondering the next step.
Yes. Yes. I guess it depends on how well this one does and if it ends up buying me another camera.
There you go.
Because that's, you know, it's the only reason I did like the last musky one that preceded this one. It's like, well, I got a new camera. May as well do something with it.
That's better than a stick in the eye.
It is.
10 days out of 10. So good job, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I don't no big plans right now. I don't know what it would be, if anything. I'm just going to get through the second or third iteration of this thing, and then we'll see. You know, we'll see how it does. And a lot of it just kind of is based on how this thing does overall. It doesn't need to do anything, which is nice. You know, it's just my time. You know, it's not like the DVD world where you could be anywhere from 5 to 10 grand in the hole before you even sold a DVD.
Well, exactly.
With the way that those things were expensive to make, so you know that's I do like the streaming aspect for that I can just toss them out there and it just really comes down to my time, because I'm not trying to travel to Aruba or you know who knows where. I'm going to places I'd probably be at anyways, so it's a pretty easy lift.
Yeah, but I mean the fact that you are able to stream it and add to it through the course of a patron's ownership, there's a huge value add there, I think.
Yeah, and it really helps me out because, you know, I'm a horrible speller. And for all I know, there could be a typo somewhere, and it wouldn't surprise me if there is. But when I did the thing called Spay Days, and I'll always view that as the dark years, because we had bought this condo that ended up being a lemon, and we're like in, you know, having legal issues, trying to sue a builder and blah, 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 blah. And at the same time, I'm working on Spay Days. And I'm just trying, I needed to get that thing done and get it off my plate so I could concentrate on the bigger picture. And I never proofed it, and I sent it off to be a DVD. So in the DVD version of Spay Days, you could turn it into, literally turn it into a drinking game. And every time you see a typo, drink. And by the end of the Spay Days, you'll have a nice glow. I will guarantee it. But the nice thing was, when I released it in the streaming version, I could go back to the file, correct all the typos. So at least in the streaming version, everything's spelled right. So if someone were to come to me right now and say, dude, yeah, this is wrong, I could change it and just re-upload the file in the background, and nobody's none the wiser. So that's kind of a relief. Because once it's on that DVD, it's done. You know, you're not going to go back and change it and reprint expense.
There's no return button on. Yeah.
There is not. So it just you apologize and go shit. So.
Well, see, the apology quote is way down now. So
yes, it is. I don't have to put the disclaimer. I think after Spade is, I put a disclaimer in the credits. I apologize if I spelled someone's name wrong. I don't have to do that now.
Perfect. Perfect.
Just go low tech. You know, just say if you don't like it, do your own DVD.
Yeah. You try it, pal.
Yeah, I can draw my line in the sand. All right, buddy. If you're so good at this.
You think it's so easy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us about this work. Listeners, this is our Christmas bonus episode for you. As you guys typically know, we're mainly during the trout season. So Merry Christmas. Hope everybody has a safe and happy new year. And RT, best wishes and safe tidings to you, brother.
Yeah, John, Richard, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks for helping me shine a little light on this little project. And for those that get it, I hope they enjoy it.
I know the people that get it will have their holidays will be enhanced.
Good.
There we go.
Happy to be a part of it.
All right, Richard, Merry Christmas, sir.
Merry Christmas to you all back to again.
Listeners, we'll see you in 2024. RT, we'll talk to you soon, sir.
All right. Thank you, brother. Have a good holiday.
Well, there you have it. Hope everybody enjoyed this little bonus episode. Richard and I and the rest of the board at the Lovells Township Historical Society wish you all the merriest Christmas and the happiest of holidays. Be safe and be prosperous and healthy in 2024, and we'll be back sooner than later with more hopefully entertaining episodes. So thanks. Until then, mind your backcast.